Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go Forward. I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant, that's blogtalkradio.com/pgant, and you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.gant@gmail.com. Jeremy?
Paul, what's doing, man?
Not too much.
New quarterback in the NFL. We got lots to argue about.
Well, I mean, if you didn't know, now you know. Brett Favre has returned to the Minnesota Vikings. Surprise. I don't think anybody is surprised. When it initially happened, it seemed Jay Glazer initially reported that Favre had texted some personnel guys in the Vikings organization stating that he was done. And then it came, then ESPN ran with it and ran with that particular story. And it just kept going on and on and on. It was a buzzsaw that day, and everybody knew it, that Brett Favre was coming back. I mean, Brett Favre was not walking away from football. I mean, we knew it. No one was stupid. And that, in some respect, if you thought this guy was really retired, then you're stupid. But anyway, Favre, who is 40 years old, actually it took three of his teammates went down to visit him. Steve Hutchinson, Jarrett Allen, and Ryan Logwell, three of the closest friends on his team, on the team. They went to visit the guy, and you know, I guess they probably didn't have to beg too much, or they probably didn't beg at all, actually. And Favre came back, and he's now in the fold. He actually earns an extra $3.5 million, and it could be as much as $20 million if he reaches certain incentives. And Favre said in his press conference, he pretty much owes the Vikings, and he also said, there's nothing on me that's 100%. There wasn't anything that was 100% last year or the year before. So Brett Favre is a guy who says that he's, you know, he's got some pains, but he's ready to come on back, and he's ready to do his thing. And I say again, and I said it before, surprise!
Well, I mean, Paul. I mean, but you're trying to, you know, you're always trying to get into your stand-up routine. But if anything, I mean, I kudos to, you know, to the players who I think went down there, rightly so.
Come on, let's stop. Come on, they didn't have to bang the guy too much.
Paul, I actually, you know what? I don't think this was as much a begging. I think that when you look at, when you analyze who went down, especially a guy like Ryan Longwell, and Jared Allen, and especially Hutchinson, Longwell especially, because they have, going back to the Green Bay days, I think if anything, and I don't think they begged him, I think they kind of went down there and said, you know what, the bottom line is, this is the week that you got in last year, and look what we did. I think if anything, getting in his ear and reminding him that, yes, training camp is totally unimportant for you as a player, but for the continuity of the team, and what happens in terms of this week and next week, this is where training camp, you know, for Brett Favre is made.
Are you surprised?
He needs just,
but are you surprised?
Oh, that he comes back? No, I think that, and I think who really said it best was almost a month ago, you know, Mike Hill said it, and that is Brett Favre should just learn to be more honest. I think what he said in his press conference today, the only thing that I think was 100% Brett Favre, 100% being honest, was he does not really know, Paul. I think, honestly, every year for him, it is a struggle. But I think the love that he has for the game and the fact that is it about money? Look, I think $20 million in 1 year, especially the majority of that that's going to be guaranteed, it's certainly not it's not easy to turn away from that. $17 million minimum, you know, he's or $13 million base. This is for him, you know, a win-win. He gets, in my opinion, to be a guy who's, in a lot of respects, Brett Favre in a couple of years will probably have an argument made who was better, you know, him or Jordan, and the fact that he plays 20 years in the NFL, 306 complete, you know, starts. The guy his resume speaks for himself.
He's not the best quarterback in NFL history, so we can't just make that argument talking about Jordan. I mean, I'd rather have a guy like a John Elway over a Brett Favre, a guy like a Joe Montana over a Brett Favre in terms of history. And I'm just talking in terms of history.
But you're going to make that argument, you know, and who we have and where we have, you know, best quarterback, not best quarterback. That you could debate for a whole show. Or we can even do a week. We could do a whole week of that. You know, we're into themes here, Paul. I mean, so we may consider that. Production people, are you listening? But far aside, I think, if anything, this was probably for them a very good move.
Well, no doubt about it. Let's be honest. The Vikings wouldn't have got to the NFC title game without Brett Favre. I said it before, I'll say it again. Guy balled. He had a great year. And he did his thing. And basically, he had the leverage here. The Vikings knew that they wouldn't get back to where they were without Brett Favre, and Brett Favre knew that. So, I mean, maybe this was a money grab by Brett Favre. Who knows?
It probably had nothing. You and I both know. This guy, Favre,
Paul, and possibly an extra $2 million.
But I think for him, this is not a guy. Paul, this is not a guy. You can look at who he is. Look at the lifestyle the guy has led. I mean, I'm telling you, sure, it's 13, 16, 20 million, and upwards of 25 million for the value of the contract. Any real man or any NFL player is ever going to turn away, or any athlete for that matter, no. But at the end of the day, Brett Favre did not come back for the money. Brett Favre came back because of his ego. And better or worse, because he really is a competitor. Because, you know, the guy,
I mean, so did you feel essentially this was – I mean, ego does have something to do with this. Let's not be blind.
You don't get to where you are, though. You don't get to be Brett Favre without an ego. And I think, unfortunately, that's why I did – I think what Mike said was extremely poignant, that he is extremely misunderstood. And part – you know, I look at Brett Favre and almost say him – Terrell Owens and, you know, Chad Ochocinco, the three of those guys are extremely misunderstood in one common, you know, denominator is
Can I stop you for a second? I don't think guys are misunderstood. These guys, I know what they are. You know what you are. These guys are attention whores. And these guys love attention. Brett Favre loves attention. Chad Ochocinco loves attention. Terrell Owens loves attention. That's what these guys do. They love attention.
But Paul, you know what?
So
the
media
portrays them as attention whores, and we as the general population are going to believe what the media puts out there for us. But I look at what Terrell says, and I look at what Chad says constantly, and I think about that quite often. Here are three guys especially, but most specifically, you know, Chad, in relationship to the three of them, Chad, Brett Favre, and T.O., They're premier in their positions, premier in what they do on this field. But off the field, they have never had one run-in with the law. They've never been sensationalized in the news. They're regular people, and they're made to be villainous because, if anything, they certainly sometimes are too honest for their own good.
Chad Ochocinco has a reality show. So that right there is an attention whore. Terrell Owens, a reality show. Another guy, an attention whore. And Brett Favre goes on.
You know what, Paul? But so does Snooki. So, Paul, you know what? Come on.
Every summer, we got to deal with this Brett Favre stuff. And another.
We don't have to see. You know what bothers me? We don't have to deal with anything. We want to deal with this. We don't have. No one has to deal with this. We don't have to at all. Be a part of. We want to be a part of Brett Favre. We want to hear and talk about this. The thing is, if you're Brett Favre, I think I've always said. And the same, I keep going back to Tiger Woods. They should have from the start just said, listen, this is, he should have said, it's my decision. Brett Favre, it's my decision to play. You don't have to follow me. I don't care if I'm screwing this team. They can either start me or they can start anybody else they want. I owe it to myself to play football if I want to play. And if I want to wait until the last minute or three games into the season and somebody wants me, then that's too bad.
I mean, if you have the leverage, by all means, exercise it. You know, you have the leverage, so take advantage of your leverage. But to me, Brett Favre got an extra $3.5 million and possibly could get an extra $8 million, which could make his total package worth $20 million. So in a lot of ways, it's about an additional $6.5 million, which will make the package $20 million. But anyway, in a lot of ways, what the guy is doing is every year he knows he's going to play. Every year he takes us through this situation. And, of course, the media is going to follow because of the story. It's Brett Favre. But every year he takes us through this. Brett, are you going to retire? Are you coming back? What are you going to do? Knowing darn well that he's coming back. He knew he was coming back. You knew
well,
he was coming back.
Paul, I'll tell you.
The world
I think
he's coming back.
You know what? I really think that, though, in Brett Favre's real mind, I think sometimes he knew he was coming back, but I think he tries to be a family man. I think he tries to go into an off season trying to wonder if he's coming back, trying to see if they're, you know. But I think at the end of the day, I think honestly, every night before Brett Favre closes his eyes, and Jerry Rice talked about it, although he can't read. In his speech into the Hall of Fame induction. And one thing Jerry Rice said was he said, I wish now, you know, that I had the knowledge of spending a little bit more time with my family today than I did when I was playing. Because he said when he was playing, he was chased by the demon of being the best. And he said, he gave himself 2 weeks, Paul, off in an entire year to spend with his family. They was back training like he was working. And I think those kind of guys, the Jerry Rice of the world, Brett Favre of the world, they are, in a way, very conflicted individuals. Here, you and I would sit there and say, you're 40 years old, which, if you really think about it, Paul, it's not that old. Like, in a certain regard, I think it is very misunderstood. Here's a guy who's going to end his entire working career at 40 years old. All he knows how to do is throw a football. So to say that, you know, he's at a crossroads, and if he can continue to do this, why shouldn't he? And if it takes him 6 months to figure it out, well, then it takes him 6 months to figure it out. It's not that easy to stop being the only person you've ever known and to go back to doing nothing all day. And it's especially hard when you are – when you had a year like Favre had.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I mean, the guy had a great year, and I understand that, but I mean –
Even the year he had with the Jets, although it certainly didn't turn out the year to be the year he had with the Vikings last year, arguably, again, he had, for at that time, what was 38, he had a year that was better than 80% of the league. I think.
He had a great year.
Contextually. He owes it to himself. I think it would be interesting. It certainly would be honest if there was a way to get Brett Favre, sit him down, and hear him speak about what goes on in his mind in terms of making these decisions. Why it is such a conflict for him? It seems like every year for the last 5 years. But I honestly believe if you could get him to articulate it, it would strictly be because I do believe he is conflicted. I think in his perfect world, he would like to have a balance between his family life and some level of being in the limelight in a profession he loves. But I think he's not willing to give up either.
Very true. I don't think he is either. But at the same time, it's just maddening that we have to go through this each and every off season for individuals.
But I still go, but Paul, you know, when are we going to start saying we don't? I go back to say it too. You know, ESPN certainly for them, they took this and made it. I mean, between this and when you go on anything relatable to the New York Jets, right on the top right hand corner, they have the Darrell Revis watch. I mean, I think that they sensationalize things. I mean, to a point where it's almost hard to have a view anything else than what they want you to have, because they're destined to get their point across. And they have made Brett Favre, in my opinion, almost like a villain. And I don't really see what he – I think the only time Brett Favre did anything wrong was with the Packers organization, when he actually did retire, hold the press conference, cry like that, and actually then force them to trade him. If anything else, in my opinion, he should have been a man and come back to that organization.
Well, I mean, the Packers, it was a situation where the Packers didn't want him. They decided that they were going to go in a different direction, and that direction was Aaron Rodgers, and not a bad move because Aaron Rodgers.
But he shouldn't have retired. He shouldn't have retired, Paul. That's where I've always said he should have never retired. He should have stuck to his guns, been a convicted individual, and say to that point, well, they have a right not to want me, and I'm still going to play, and they're going to trade me, or, you know, I'm going to sit on their books for buku dollars, and it will hurt them that way. He should have been more open and more honest then. He seems to be more open and more honest now.
Well, you're right. I mean, but again, like you said, the guy is conflicted in a lot of ways, and in some respect, maybe he feels like, you know, he wants to retire, but he just can't let it go. He just can't let it go. Sometimes it's just like that. You got, you know, a woman or a man in your life that you love so much, and you want to be with this man, but you know you're not supposed to be with this man. But along the line, but as time goes by, you realize that you can't let this man go. So you stick by this man and stay with this man and stay with this man. And you just keep doing what you do because that's all you know and that's what you love to do. So in a lot of ways,
yeah, I mean, I still think though, Paul, he to a certain degree, you know, Favre to a varying degree though, has a lot. I hate to say a lot to do in a very short period of time, because the only thing he continues to do for himself every year is, in my opinion, raise the bar to a level that's exponential. I said it. I don't think you're going to see the same year out of the Vikings. I think they're in a pretty good division to begin with. I think last year was a complete aberration. If you remember, I think it was the second or third game into the season. Had Greg Lewis not come up with that ridiculous catch, they lost that game, and that was a huge momentum shifter for the Vikings.
I mean, yeah, it was a big play. It was a big play by both Brett Favre and Greg Lewis.
It was an aberration catch by Lewis. I mean, it was a throw by Favre that probably shouldn't have been caught.
Well, it was a great catch, but I give Greg Lewis a lot of credit, but also give Brett Favre a lot of credit for staying alive and putting that ball where it needed to be for Greg Lewis to make that play. And it was a big play, and it led the Vikings to a victory there, and that propelled them to a 12-4 season, and ultimately led them to the NFC Championship games. So let me know what you think about Brett Favre and the diva, diva Brett Favre, the diva Favre. Let me know what you think about him. The numbers to call 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.gant@gmail.com. Well, Brett Favre, it's on the table. Let me know what you think about Favre. Are you tired of him? Do you want him to go away? Or are you just happy that he's back? Some are happy, some are not. But Brett Favre is back. And
so, Paul, I want to know. You know, I've been on the record, Paul. I say that I don't see them even winning the division. And I mean that. I think they'll get in the playoffs, but I don't see them winning the division. I actually think this year is going to be the Packers' year. But where do you see their chances in this team?
Well, everybody's talking about the Packers, and yes, they're a team that's positioned to and poised to make a run at the division. But I also think you got to look at the Chicago Bears. Jay Cutler had off year last year and threw a lot of interceptions. Not a good year for Cutler at all. But they've added some pieces, and they added Julius Peppers in the offseason to strengthen that defense. And if Jay Cutler can turn this thing around and play a lot better football than he did last year, then I think the Bears team is actually poised to possibly make a run at that division and possibly win that division. So, I mean, I think the Bears and the Packers will be there in that division and may sneak up and win that division. I mean, it's not a bet. It's not a sure thing that since Brett Favre is in the fold that the Vikings are headed back to the NFC title game. And especially a lot of times in football, man, sometimes it takes that perfect season to get that thing done. And that perfect season sometimes means no injuries. And things have to go your way. And who's to say that key guys won't go down this year for the Vikings? Who's to say that won't happen? Because it's always a good possibility that it will happen. So, I mean, that should be interesting to see what happens there. But ultimately, there's no guarantee that this Viking ball club will get back to the NFC title game and will ultimately win this division. There's no guarantee that will happen. And I think you're right in that sense.
I mean, I think that division, I think if any division, you know, in the NFC, I think certainly will be the most competitive. I also think totally they had last year a season that was one for, you know, it was an, I don't want to say aberration, but for that group of talent, they were very young, and they still are very young, aside from Favre.
Right. I mean, and they, like you said, you got Percy Harvin, Barry and Sidney Rice, of course, Adrian Peterson, and you got Jared Allen on the defensive side of the ball. And Jared Allen's only 28 years old, so he's still a young guy. So Jared Allen definitely is a guy who's big on that ball club along with the rest of the guys that I mentioned. So, I mean, hey, if Brett Favre has the year that he had last year, then you're going back, no doubt about it. But Brett Favre could go back to that Favre that we saw near the end of the season with the Jets, that shaky Brett Favre. And he's not getting any younger. He'll be 41 in October. So the guy is not getting any younger.
I also think, honestly, I think this year, if he's being serious about his injuries, Paul, you know, they're certainly not, they're not walking into camp with the same Brett Favre. And I mean, if you listen to Brett Favre, he claims that this knee is still bothering him, but, you know, the phrase he uses, and I'll piggyback on it, he felt he owed it to the organization, which, I don't really know I even understand that, but, you know, and I don't think that they got enough out of him in regards to that. I find the whole coverage of Brett Favre almost a little bit peculiar, considering they have a chance here to talk and get at least ask or answer the right questions, but they throw this guy softballs. But then I go online, you know, 4:30, and I see him just completely dogging Haynesworth. They're killing Rex Ryan. I sometimes wonder with ESPN and all these NFL, you know, insider reporters. I mean, they don't. If I would have been there, first thing I would have said, I would have wanted to know, you know, if you claim to be so injured, how are you gonna, you know, get through this? Why are you coming back and doing this?
Right. I mean. Obviously, like you said, ego has something to do with it. And I also think it's a money grab as well. He got an extra $3 million. So I think that has something to do with it as well.
I'm just surprised you really think that. I'm really surprised, Paul. But you really think $3 million is a lot of money for Brett Favre?
Well, I mean, it's more than he was making.
Yeah, but if you're Brett Favre, who's got he was on a national Sears campaign. You know, he, because of all his mishigosh, if you will, you know, bringing in a little culture, a little Yiddish to this show, he gets advertising to be a fool. All he has to do is be himself, and the guy lands a national, national advertising campaign.
Let's see what some of the callers think. Hello, you're on Go For It.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Paul, I was just wondering what your take is. If you think possibly that Tony Dungy's a racist for going at Rex Ryan like that?
No, I don't see a race element at all. I see a guy who is a devout Christian, and you know, when he hears language like that, obviously it's bothersome to him. So I don't think race has anything to do with this.
Well, I mean, how come he doesn't take Rex under his tutelage like he did with Michael Vick?
Rex Ryan said a curse word that in this country isn't even illegal. It's debatable if it's immoral. It's debatable if it's immoral. And you're going to compare Rex Ryan to Michael Vick, who murdered. I think at some point you got to check yourself. You got to check yourself, Paul. I mean, before you wreck yourself here. Rex Ryan.
Let the caller explain why it's a race situation.
Well, I just think, how come he hasn't taken guys like Ryan Leaf under his belt, too, you know, that's had problems? Why is it just guys like Michael Vick? You know, I don't usually see things in black and white, but this is coming through to me in black and white, especially because, you know, he's getting on the guy, Rex Ryan. For what? I mean, for what we all do almost, you know, most of us do every day of our lives.
But I don't
taking on a guy that's killed animals, you know. So.
But I don't see anything. I don't see anything wrong. I will say this. I think both parties had a right to voice their opinion. You have to remember now, first of all, Tony Dungy is now part of the media, and this gets back to what I was saying earlier. Part of what these guys now are asked to do, especially former athletes, this story was probably put on his desk because, like Paul said, everyone knows that Tony Dungy, and you would point out, takes people under their wing. The producers probably went to him and said, "We want you to do this story because when you say this, the slant on this is going to be how wrong it is of a guy to say this." I think. Just like Paul said,
I don't necessarily agree with that. I just think it's a situation with Tony Dungy being a devout Christian that he is, and hearing language like that Rex Ryan spews on Hard Knocks each and every week, it's bothersome to the guy.
I could see that point of view where it bothers the guy, but for him to say that the league should step in, you know, that's just too far.
Oh, I mean, I don't disagree with.
Now,
I don't disagree with you there at all.
But the NFL, what coach isn't cursing? Just because the camera's, you know, not on them right now. I don't see it.
And old Rex is probably playing to the camera as well.
But even if he is playing to the camera, Paul, I mean, I think the caller brings up a very good point. I think if you're going to single out the guy that's the only coach in the entire NFL that's on HBO this season – I think that it was so contextually misguided to say that it's wrong of Rex Ryan and the league should step in just because Rex Ryan did. If anything, then Tony Dungy should have stepped up and said, in his X number of years of coaching, here are the other list of coaches that use that foul language, not just, Rex Ryan. I think if anything, and that's why I thought today what Rex Ryan said and what he did, I gave him a lot of credit for stepping up and saying, certainly it may not have been appropriate, but if anything, he felt that Tony Dungy should have really, been a little bit more cautious with his words.
Hey, I mean, again, he's an NFL coach, and that's a part of the culture. It is a part of the culture. I just understand where Tony Dungy's coming from. I don't necessarily agree with Tony Dungy, but I just understand where he's coming from. And it's on HBO, so you can the curse words can come through. They don't have to bleep them. It's HBO. So, in a lot of ways, I understand what Dungy is saying, but just like you, the caller, and Jeremy, I don't agree with Tony Dungy there. I just understand where he's coming from.
All right, thanks,
guys. Thank you for your call.
Well, it was actually, you know, I'm glad the caller brought that up, because I found you said something interesting too, Paul. I mean, this is on a network. I think where Tony Dunne felt that he needed to talk about this without bringing in a lot more context. I mean, this is on a network that glorified, you know, killing of people in The Sopranos. Nudity is the regular, and he's going to single out a coach who, by the way, you know, Rex Ryan had no say. The NFL and the New York Jets put this show on HBO, not Rex Ryan. He was told as part of his job, you have to be mic'd up. So, and for Tony Dungy to sit there and say to me that it's wrong, that he curses, I just, and you know me, Paul, you and I, and it's very well known, you don't curse at all, and I certainly, and I think it is totally acceptable, you know, to speak freely as long as it's not denigrating another person. I just totally think it was absolutely ridiculous for Dungy to come out and even say this stuff, let alone direct it.
Let me play devil's advocate here, because I understand what you're saying, but Rex Ryan does represent the Shield, which is the NFL Shield, and that's supposedly a family-oriented organization, or organization that supports families coming on and being a part of their product and coming on to the stadiums and things of that nature. So in a lot of ways, you can understand why Dungy would say what he's saying. In some respect, maybe it's a misrepresentation of the NFL in a lot of ways, because it's just not putting this, the NFL is not being seen in a good light here by Rex Ryan.
Oh, you know what, Paul? Well, then you know what the NFL should have done? The NFL should have had the smarts to have them bleep it out or edit. They could have, if the NFL and the HBO, they could have edited every one of those curse words out. And furthermore, this is on HBO. And, Paul, you know, in this country, he's a head coach in the NFL. And so then they need to make it part of their personal conduct policy that you can't curse. Unless they do that, it has no bearing on their Shield and the image of their organization, because the last time I checked, it's not illegal, and it is very debatable if it's even immoral to curse. I mean, there is freedom of speech. He did not; his curse words were not denigrating any specific person or any, you know, any specific ethnicity. I just certainly I find it totally ridiculous.
I agree with you. I think. I understand. Like I said, like I told the caller, I said before, I understand where Tony Dungy's coming from on this. I just don't necessarily agree with it. I mean, it's just a part of the NFL culture, and it's just the way it is in the NFL. Coaches use that type of language. Players use that type of language on a consistent basis, and it's reality TV, and you're going to see reality on some level, and that's what you get with Rex Ryan. I mean, and part of it, he could be playing to the camera on some level as well. But that's what you're going to get with Rex Ryan. And actually, Bart Scott, the linebacker for the Jets, had something funny to say. He said, if you don't want your kids to see Andrew Dice Clay or Bernie Mac, tell them to go see Bill Cosby. You can't suggest for somebody to tone it down or say he wouldn't coach for me and I wouldn't hire him. Why are you farming someone else's land? Farm your own land. Those were the words of Bart Scott talking about Tony Dungy and Rex Ryan and that whole situation. So basically what Bart Scott is telling Tony Dungy is to mind your business.
And I think that's the bottom line. I mean, I think – and that's why I go back to – and I know, Paul, you don't like the whole concept that the media is staging a lot of things for, you know, us – the general public, but I see this on its face. Why Tony Dungy has to come out where I mean there you hear it in games, Paul. If you're watching just games and they catch that sideline, like, you hear players cursing, and of course because it's on network TV now, they don't even there's never a reaction. But I've never heard, and Tony Dungy could have come out with this. You know, if it wanted to be a personal commentary last year, this year, the year before, when he was coaching, why he wants to pick on Rex Ryan is beyond me. when he's on, and especially when he's doing, when he's cursing on a pay per use network. It's beyond cable. HBO is a premium channel, so you have to pay extra money. So there's another level of censorship. And anyone that knows about HBO knows that their shows are certainly colorful, quote unquote, in nature.
But it's not racial by any stretch of the imagination, as the caller tried to imply. I don't think race had anything to do with this. It could have been Michael Vick on the air cursing that way, and I think Tony Dungy would have something to say about it. And I think that's, again, it's the type of guy he is. And obviously that type of language is offensive to him, and he doesn't want to hear it. And so you can understand where he's coming from, but again, it's on HBO, like you said. And that's a network that allows, you're allowed to curse on the network. It's not going to get bleeped out. And it's reality TV also. And the reality of it is that Rex Ryan is the head football coach of the New York Jets. And that's the type of language he uses with his players. So that's just the nature of the situation. That's just the reality of the situation. So if you have anything on an opinion on Tony Dungy's comments about Rex Ryan and also Brett Favre, the Brett Favre situation, give us a call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. You can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. We're expected to be joined by heavyweight contender Michael Grant, who we'll talk about his upcoming fight on Saturday night against Tomas Adamek in Newark, New Jersey. So it should be interesting to get his take on the fight and what he expects going into that fight. It's a big fight for him, and it's kind of a make-or-break fight for him. If he loses here, then you can kind of forget about Michael Grant ever pretty much making it to the top of the heavyweight division. So it should be interesting to get his take on what's going on there. And also, Brett Favre, he's back. He's back! Are you surprised? I'm not surprised. I don't think anyone's surprised that Brett Favre is back. But he's back. He's going to do another year with the Minnesota Vikings. And it should be interesting to see if he still has game and if he's willing, if he's going to get it done for the Vikings. Hello, you're on Go For It. To be interested to see if he's going to get done for the Minnesota Vikings. And I'm not rooting for Brett Favre, but I'm not necessarily rooting against the guy, but I'm not rooting for him.
What do you mean by that, Paul? You're not rooting for him, but you're not rooting against him.
I mean, it's kind of whatever to me. Obviously, I think the Vikings, like you said, have a good team. But, like you said, I think that division's better this year with the Bears and with the Packers. So I think that division's better for – I think the division's better. So I think with the division being better, I think it's going to be hard for the Vikings to duplicate what they did last season. And that's 12 wins, and that's a trip to the NFC Championship game. I think it's going to be hard for them to do that. And you're right. And I think it's going to be – I don't see them going back to the NFC title game, actually.
I don't think
they'll go back to the NFC title game. I really don't.
I think the Vikings fans and any Brett Favre fans out there, I honestly could tell you if I would have been anyone related to, Brett Favre, if I had gotten his ear, I'd have told him, I mean, this is a year you go out on and you get a chance to do one of a few things, legends get to do, which is truly go out really on top. Whether he wins the Super Bowl or not, he really had a chance to go out on top, and I think it's going to be a shame. I do not see him having the season he had. In fact, Paul, NFL is a quirky league. Week one injuries are always interesting.
And injuries definitely could affect your season. It could be a bad injury, and that's it for you. That's it. All those Super Bowl dreams and hopes and aspirations that you had are down the drain. down the drain.
I mean, I don't. I'm a little perplexed. I think, you know, honestly, when you look at the off season too that the Vikings had, one of the bigger questions I think they're going to have going into this season, again with Favre, if I'm Childress, you know, they don't obviously necessarily say they worry about Favre's talent, but the players around him. They've had no real continuity in the off season, no real continuity in their training camp, and certainly they know Favre. All the players had a year to play with him. But if again, I do wonder, you know, if this injury he had is at all severe, what happens if he gets banged up? I mean, they certainly are doing nothing to support you know, the other quarterbacks are doing nothing to support the backups on their team. And It seems like a perfect storm this year. If Favre at all wavers, if he goes out or goes down for a game or two, could it be the end of their season? Or if he has one or two bad games, was this a big mistake for them? And because last year he threw only 7 interceptions, which if you know Favre and Favre's career, that's an aberration for Brett Favre. Brett Favre is known to throw those interceptions and throw, you know, 2 good interceptions a game. But for him to have less than a half of interception per game, it's very un-Favre-like. So if you take that into account and you say, well, then this year it'll go back to being Favre, well, he's got a lot, you know, they're going to go from 7 interceptions to probably close to, you know, 14, 15, 10, between 10, 15 interceptions, maybe even more, you know, 18 interceptions. And that's for them, that's a minus or plus, you know, 11 in the turnover ratio. And can they withstand that? Is this team able to withstand that? Defense wasn't really that great last year. Are they going to be able, if they're on the field more, if Favre is throwing more interceptions, to withstand all of this? You know, can their running game, you know, withstand maybe an injury to Peterson, or is Peterson maybe going to – is someone in the league going to catch on to him, or maybe Percy Harvin? You know, to me, there's just little questions, not big ones, but you and I also said I see very much the issue of the talent around their division. Green Bay is another year older and it's certainly another year just as talented.
Right, and like I think, like I said, I talked about the Bears. I don't think Cutler. I think Cutler's going to have a better season than he had the year before, and I think those guys will come to play, and I think they will have a great season. We're now being joined by heavyweight contender Michael Grant. Michael, hello.
Yeah, how you doing?
Pretty
Michael,
good.
How are you?
This is Michael. Y'all got the wrong guy. I'm calling a little late. This is Willie.
Oh,
Willie,
how are you, sir?
Good. How you doing today?
Doing well.
How was y'all talking
Willie,
about the Bears?
It's good to have you. Willie, and with the Brett Favre situation now, and Brett Favre, a guy who has returned, and it's funny, you're a guy who walked away as a Pro Bowler. So talk about how hard it is to walk away when you're a Pro Bowler and you can still play the game.
You know, it was very hard for me to walk away. I wanted to play one more year. My body wasn't feeling as well as I liked it to be. That last year, I tore my hamstring and my back was bothering me. And you know, I missed 6 games, but I still made the Pro Bowl and made, you know, 17 All Pro that year. And you know, I mean, we were 10-6 and didn't make the playoffs. So. In my mind, I mean, I wanted to go back. I thought I was going to go back. And as it got closer to that around April, May, I just wasn't feeling as well. And, you know, that's when I decided to go in there and talk to Herm Edwards. That was his first year coming in. And I told him that, you know, I didn't think my body was feeling right. And, I basically left around the minicamp time. But, you know, it's real hard to walk away, especially the way Brett played last year. And, you know, I played at the Pro Bowl level, but I did, you know, miss some games. So, it made it a little easier for me. I didn't want to come back if I couldn't play at a high level, and I was having questions about my hamstrings and my back and my hips, and that made my decision a little easier.
Now, what do you think about this whole Brett Favre situation?
You know, I think he still can play. You know, and I think that that definitely makes them a better team. And like you said, the loss. I think the thing he's been doing better. I think when Brett was in Green Bay, he was more of a gunslinger, and I think he didn't worry about the picks as much, and you know he could get away with more things than he does now. And I think now he takes it. You know, to me, it looks like. You know, even with the Jets, I mean, he isn't turning the ball over and throwing the ball just up in the air like he was doing those last couple of years in Green Bay. Because I remember some days he was just throwing the ball. And last year was a great indication of how well he can play. And with the money they're paying Brett now for to come in there and play this year, I mean, he wants to go out on a high note. And I really think this is his last year playing. And, I think he makes them. Is not the top team in the NFC, the top two or three team in the NFC to get back to the NFC Championship and have a run, the shot at getting to the Super Bowl.
You know, one of the things though, Willie, you are certainly a top flight player. How difficult is this for the other players on the team to watch this guy year in and year out, and especially today, coming in on a private jet and then walking right into practice and then practicing first and going on his soap opera right after that, and then going back to the dorms with him.
Well, you know what? If it was a guy that was a younger guy that wasn't proven, I think it would be more of an issue. But the fact of what he was able to do last year and the level he played at, and I mean, let's face it, the guy's going to be 41 years old. I mean, you know, I stopped playing. I was going on 36. I mean, the guy doesn't want to go to training camp. He doesn't want to put his body through all that. And I guess, you know, if you look at it, he's trying to rest that ankle up. I don't think the guy's a man. I think the guy just wanted him to make up his mind. And I think they knew all along he was coming in. You know, they just. I think they do some of that stuff just to make it look more. And I think, if Brett wasn't going to play this year, he would have said something earlier. I don't think he would have strung it out this long if he wasn't going to play. He was just giving his body more time to rest and just waiting until they break camp. So I think the guys understand up there. And, if Brett gets hurt or he doesn't get off to a good start, I mean, we'll see what happens. But as long as he goes out there and he's competitive and, like you said, he doesn't turn the ball over a lot, I mean, that's still a top team. Just like the Jets. The Jets have all the talent in the world. But Mark Sanchez can't throw 20 picks or they're going to be in trouble this year.
And we're talking
about. And then that's.
Pro Bowl offensive tackle, Willie Rofe. Now, Willie, actually, a lot of people don't know this about you, but you're a guy who was a big basketball guy and almost went to college to play basketball. Talk about how you made the decision to go to football instead of basketball.
Well, you know, growing up in Arkansas at the time, you know, in my situation, I started playing football at a real young age, and, you know, 10 years old, organized football. And at that time, growing up in Pine Bluff, it was organized football, Little League, and it was organized baseball. Well, I wasn't patient enough to play baseball, and I live out here by Anaheim, California, and my homeboy, Torrey Hunter, you know, he's from Pine Bluff, and we went to the same high school. My dad and mom grew up in the same church and everything. Torrey started playing baseball at a young age. Well, I didn't start playing basketball organized to the 7th, 8th grade, and I had a lot of potential, and you know, I was around 6'4½, and when I was in high school was when Scottie Pippen was turning into the great player he was at UCA around 1987 when he came out. That was going into my senior year. So before my senior football season, I went to basketball camp for a couple of weeks or longer. I can't remember, at UCA, and did real good at that camp and got Mr. Rebound. Well, you know, and I was a big guy. I could handle it a little bit, but I was more of an inside type of player. And I got Mr. Rebound, and I got a scholarship to UCA when Pippen left. And I had Southeast Missouri. I got a letter from Connecticut. I had a couple schools. But, you know, I didn't start playing organized till, you know, junior high. So you know, I decided to take the football scholarship, and that's part of the reason I didn't get recruited real heavily because, you know, I was 225 in high school, and by the time I got to Louisiana Tech and got redshirted, I was 235. But I'm a quick twitch fiber guy, so, you know, I was just real quick. I was always very quick, and the basketball drills and ability definitely helped me at the tackle position, move my feet and shuffling and everything. It definitely was a plus for me. So, you know, like I said, but I was a decent basketball player. I had some potential.
Now, also, Will, you're also a guy who you were 11th time Pro Bowler, and when you retired, do you think you're a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I think you know. I think I should, you know, I should be considered for the Hall, and you know, whenever they decide to call my name, and you know, I would be honored. It would be an honor for me to get up to go up there and join that elite group. I was at the barbershop today, and I said, Warren Moon, I live out here where Tony Gonzalez is from Huntington, and I saw Warren Moon at the barbershop, and we were just talking about old times, and, you know, so you have to show respect to those guys and what they accomplished, and to be in that elite group, to be called, and to have a chance to go up there and be a part of that elite group would be very special, and, you know, I do understand this, with athletes that establish themselves as outstanding players, you know, you have to walk a fine line now. You know, you can't, you have to watch yourself in the public eye, and you have to conduct yourself, you know, on and off the field, just like when I played it, you know, now, you know, a certain way. You know, you guys get me in trouble and doing stuff to tarnish their name and tarnish the Hall of Fame. The league and the commissioner, they don't really want to see that right now.
You know, Willie, and you bring up, you know, the league and certainly, you know, these players. One of the things Paul and I were talking about for the last couple of weeks, certainly, and I'm interested, the guy like you spanned a great career. These young rookies that walk into the league, and it's interesting because you were a first-round pick, you know, eighth pick in the first round. But these young guys now, eighth pick this year's draft gets, like, what, $15, $18 million guaranteed? I mean, how realistic – I'm sorry?
Sam Bradford, $50 million
guaranteed. Well, I'm talking about the eighth pick in the, you know, eighth pick. Yeah. And I mean, how much, I mean, how difficult was it, especially at the end of your career, knowing the career you had, to see these young, unproven guys, and many of them, like you said, who have maybe some character issues, get these guaranteed contracts, which it's just almost mind-numbing to look at?
Well, I mean, but in hindsight, I mean, when I came in the league, you know, I signed a deal with, you know, getting a nice bonus and was making over $1 million a year. And at that time, the top tackles in the league, Munoz and them, were making $1 million. So it was the same thing that was going on when I came in the league in 1993. So I mean, it's just the way the market, what's happening now, and the way these contracts are structured, they're getting all this money. And I think they're going to probably eventually have to do something about capping it. But, I mean, to be honest with you and to be fair, I mean, if a guy's drafted that high and they go in the top 10 or in the first round, these are the elite players in college football, and you can't put them on, you can't do them like the NBA. But I would say that in the contract, you know, they might not get as much guaranteed money, but if the guy comes in and he's a starter in the NFL, and if a starter's averaging, you know, $5-6 million a year, I think if the guy comes in and he's a good football player and he establishes himself as a good football player, he should be able to make the starter salary. If he comes in the league and doesn't get off to the best start, or isn't starting, then maybe you take him down some. But I feel like if a guy comes in the league and he's drafted that high and they throw him on the football field, well, he deserves to get paid. I mean, so I can't say that these young guys don't deserve the money because they drafted this high and that's what they're paying them. You know, Sam Bradford's going to start. You see my point? I mean, if a guy comes in and he plays well, you know, it's not fair to him if he's not making the money that a good football player should make.
But don't you think in some respect the system is backwards? I mean, you got a guy like Sam Bradford who's never thrown an NFL pass, and he's guaranteed $50 million. So it basically says basically the system is set up where all you need to do is have a great college career, and you're going to get paid a lot of money.
Well, yeah, and I understand that, but all right, let's look at a guy like, what was the guy drafted out of Fresno State or what, in California the other year, a while back? He went on the
Ryan Leaf.
No, not Ryan Leaf, the guy that started in Houston for a while and got the hell beat out of him. Remember he was averaging all the time every year?
Okay,
David a guy
Carr.
Like that, David Carr. A guy like that went on to start a few years. And he got beat up so bad in Houston because he didn't have a line that you know, his career is basically over when he left that team. So for a guy like that that comes in and is playing, it's not his fault he didn't have the protection. You know what I mean? I know he didn't play as well as he would have liked well. But if Sam Bradford comes in and he starts and he plays well, I think he should make – I'm not saying he should have $50 million guaranteed. But if he comes in and he plays well, he should be able to reach that kind of money. You see my point? So maybe they take some when they cap if they cap it off the guaranteed money. But if he comes in and he's starting and he's playing every week, then he needs to be able to make up to the amount of money that he should be able to make the money back up. Is my point.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, I understand, definitely understand your point. I'm just a surprise because you see a lot of veterans coming out saying that, you know, there's something wrong with the system where rookies have the opportunity or are actually making more money than of guys who are proven.
Okay, yeah, but I heard Marshall Faulk and some of those guys say something about that too. A guy that came in and was a top 10 pick, he was one of the guys that was making a lot of money. Over a veteran, it was proven too. And I came in at my time, like I said, making what a veteran tackle was making in the league at that time, or close to what the top guys were making. But I came in and didn't miss a down for my first, you know, three and a half, my first 57 games. I didn't miss a snap. We didn't dress the seven linemen back then. And I was a Pro Bowler in my second year. So, you know, all pro guy. So are you saying that a guy like me, that's all poor in my second year, shouldn't be making good money? Yeah, because I've established myself as a good player at a young age. But
two things. You were the A, and I think you would agree. You were certainly not. I don't want to use the word aberration because you're a great player, and you worked your tail off to get where you were. I think it's refreshing, if anything. It's certainly a change of pace to hear. Someone like yourself who was a veteran and saw these young guys making that money at such an unproven age where you and many veterans at the latter part of their career are pretty much resigned to taking a lot less money for what they're worth. Look at, for example, a guy like Brian Westbrook who, I mean, if he would have gone to a bigger college, a better named college, would have walked in with huge dollars and had a much more lucrative career than he did. But it's certainly interesting to hear that, you know, someone back the young, unproven athletes saying to a certain degree that, you know, they worked and they continue to work to earn that money.
Yeah, like I said, I think that's a real touchy situation, and that's one of the problems they're having right now with the labor agreement. These owners don't want to pay those guys all that money. And, you know, I mean, what if Sam Bradford goes out there and goes with him, you know, breaks his neck or goes out there and has a traumatic injury? You know, you never know what's going to happen to this kid. So, you know, it's touchy. Like I said, I would back off if they structure it the right way, back off some of the guaranteed money. So, I don't think a guy needs to get $50 million guaranteed, but I think if a guy comes in and he's a starter in the NFL at a young age and he gets off the playing well and is off to a good start, I think he should be paid starter money. You see my point? So I agree that they need to scale back on it. But if a guy comes in and he's playing well and he's a starter, I'm going to make up to, you know, similar money, not what the top guys are making, but I want to make starter-type money if I'm starting and playing in the NFL. So that's the point. So I think it's a touchy situation, and they have to come to an agreement on how they will structure this. But you just can't say, all right, I'm going to draft this guy to top 10, and he's going to make $3 million, $3 million, $3 million, I don't. That football is different from basketball. It's a different sport, and we don't have guaranteed contracts.
And Willie, we thank you for stopping by, Willie. We got to get you back during this, when the season starts, and we got to talk some more football. Your guy is very knowledgeable. We want to get your insight when the season gets started. Thank you for calling, Willie.
And I appreciate y'all having me. I know I was running around taking care of some stuff, but you know, I like talking with y'all guys, and it's a great show.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us. Thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Willie Rowe for coming in and stopping by and giving his insight. You can listen to past shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. Take care. See you later. Bye-bye.